Oh, I'm out. Crash. Somebody hit me in the rear, turn two, and then somebody hit me in the rear again in turn three, for sake.
The dulcet tones there of Sebastian Vettel. Welcome to the NRF1 podcast on Acast, on iTunes, and now, of course, on Future Radio in Norwich. I hope this finds you well. Apologies for the delay in getting the podcast out to you. It's been a busy time with football, association football, that is, or soccer. So if you're one of our stateside listeners, hopefully that ties in. If you want to know how well it's going, just check out Norwich City and the Premier League, and that will tell you all about the mood around this place at the moment. But we are not here to talk about football. I am certainly not here to talk about football. We are going to be talking about Formula One, and boy, is there a lot to talk about. Got a top panel here as well. Stephen Rust and Richard Baxter are with me, and we've all been catching up furiously with the race in Russia because it's been a little while since the action completed. And we will start with Russia. What a race. Nico Rosberg won. Lewis Hamilton is playing catch up to an even greater extent now. But we're not going to start there. We're going to start with the key events that really kicked off a dramatic week, as you heard at the top of the podcast, with Sebastian Vettel being hit twice by Daniel Kvyat, all off the back of what happened in the previous round in China, when Seb, I think, was looking to make up with Daniel because he felt he'd rather overreacted. It's all kind of turned around since then, hasn't it, Rich?
Yeah, it's still kind of changed a lot. It's kind of understandable when you look at the accident, and Vettel's radio message was just, part of him you could clear was, you know, he was clearly angry, yet the other half seemed to be just, what's going on, surprised that he's been taken out because it's Formula One and not the British touring cars.
Or stock car racing, which is what it seemed to be at the time. Well, what did we all make of the incident then? Because, as I said, Sebastian Vettel, he'd had a pretty torrid weekend of it to that point anyway. He's under pressure, I think, because of his results at the start of this season. His gearbox went, so he had a grid penalty. He had, obviously, the confrontation with Kvyat last time. He then gets sort of tagged at the start, early on in the start, and then, because of the puncture, I think he was slowing down, so he then got hit properly from behind, which sent him into the wall and ended his race. Steve, is there any mitigation here for Daniel Kvyat, or is it straightforward?
I think it's fairly straightforward. I mean, I think if I remember rightly, they gave him a drive through or stop go sort of penalty, didn't they? I think it actually was, which I sort of thought was probably sort of fair, but then when you sort of look at it was two races in a row, really. But then I didn't really blame Kvyat for the previous race. I thought there was other reasons behind that. But I mean, yeah, I mean, he hit him sort of at least a couple of times and maybe once more. But I mean, it was just unfortunate really for Vettel. I mean, the start of his season is probably in some ways similar to Lewis Hamilton's, you know, with sort of being caught up in bad luck, not all of it his own fault. And, you know, it's another race with no points. You know, and that's not really what you'd expect. We're a top driver with four championships, a team like sort of Ferrari, and I think he's feeling the pressure of it. I think you could kind of hear that in his outburst on the radio, which I'm sure we'll get to in a minute.
Well, we've all heard it, and we'll probably hear it. We'll probably play it out at the end of the podcast as well. But I mean, it was interesting. Seb, obviously, he was quite angry on the radio. He also went straight to the Red Bull pit wall, didn't he, and made his point there to his old team, just to let them know about what was going on.
Yeah, it was quite interesting as he made his way back to the pits, because I think he was also driving a little moped, which he probably thought, yeah, well, at least I get some driving done today. But yeah, obviously he'd seen the incident, went and had a word with Christian Horner, and he was obviously quite sympathetic about, you know, for Vettel, because he kind of gave him a pat on the back and they were chatting quite happily. But I don't know, Kvyat's still a young driver. You know, people make mistakes. He also clearly made a mistake. Did he really need to have Vettel go that crazy? I don't know, but it's understandable, definitely.
I find it astonishing that they've made the change, and we'll probably get into this later on. But I mean, I think what happened in China, I don't really think there was any major blame. I think even Sebastian Vettel kind of assumed by the end of it, you know what, it was all right. He went for a gap that was there, and it couldn't be helped that Kimi was on his outside. And in this one, I think the first one was the mistake, clearly. The second one, if he's slowing down on a corner that's quite high, you know, high speed turn, has he got any mitigation in the fact that he, I mean, it's not like we're driving around the city centre and you need to give lots of space to the guy in front.
I mean, you could call it a racing incident, but then he went and hit him again. You know, I think that was, for me, the biggest problem. I mean, you could probably excuse the first hit as an incident. I mean, as Vettel was slowing down, I mean, perhaps Kvyat hadn't realised that he'd got some sort of puncture or was slowing down for that reason. But to then go hit him again straight into the side, you know, where he had clear visibility, that's where I think the penalty came in, really. I think it was on that, not the first one. So I think that's why, you know, Vettel was probably mostly upset, because I think he probably could have continued if it weren't for that one. I don't think there was a great deal of damage done at the back of his car.
That's true, he could have continued with that. But I just thought the first one was the real mistake.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of see it, because in turn one, you know you need to brake, and Kvyat just didn't seem to brake as much as everyone else. I mean, when it's on, effectively, I think it's turn three, isn't it? Because it's a long left-hander.
Yeah.
And at that kind of speed, at the start of the race, there's going to be cars everywhere. And if there's someone going slow and he's on the track, you know, you could argue that Vettel should have been on the runoff, because that's still tarmac. And if he wasn't sure about his car, he could have gone on there to get off the racing line. But then there was still space on the left-hand side up the inside, which, you know, obviously wasn't seen by Kvyat. I don't know if he could have done anything to get his car there. But, you could argue it, that, the first incident was the one that was real cause of damage. And then that really led to the second one happening. So, I think it's kind of just, really, for Kvyat to get a penalty. But maybe a bit harsh with all Red Bull's decisions.
Yeah, maybe harsh to lose your race seat. I mean, that's the big thing. Jenson Button quoted on how harsh it was. Daniel Kvyat will now race for Toro Rosso for the rest of the season. Max Verstappen will be promoted to drive alongside Daniel Ricciardo. So it's a new car for Max, new engineer he's going to have, and he's also going to have Kvyat's tyre choices for Spain as well. Has Sebastian Vettel had, as you said, he went over to the pit wall, has he had an influence in the fact that this change has been made? Because it seemed rather harsh otherwise. And the thing that gets me is it actually first opportunity, we can get Max in this car now, let's just get Max in this car because he's pretty good?
Quite possibly, but I mean, Kvyat's actually had some really good drives, you know.
The last time out, he was on the podium.
I mean, I think he actually earned that seat at Red Bull, you know, and I think just a number of sort of rookie incidents has just caused him to, I think, quite harshly be relegated, really, back to sort of Toro Rosso. I mean, I think if we were looking half a dozen races down the line and we were looking at a similar sort of story, I would say, okay, that's fair enough. But I just think it was just really harsh.
And I found it interesting that Carlos Sainz actually kind of likes this, because there was obviously a bit of tension at Toro Rosso that maybe everyone wasn't aware of until this change. So Carlos Sainz is a little bit happier, and that makes you wonder how Max Verstappen will deal with moving up to race alongside Daniel Ricciardo, who, if I'm not mistaken, finished behind Daniel Kvyat in the Drivers' Championship last season.
Yeah, he did. Ricciardo finished behind him last season, even though you could argue he had better results throughout the season. But I mean, you were saying about Vettel, I think that was slightly the case, because he's kind of Red Bull golden boy with four titles there. I think they kind of thought, right, if he's saying something, we've kind of got to do something. But they could have just had a word with Kvyat and said, you're getting a bit hot-headed, just calm it down, think about the team. But I think what it was more about was Ferrari and Mercedes sniffing around Verstappen. So Red Bull thought, right, let's take the opportunity, like, you know, as you said, take the opportunity while you can, get him in the car. But it's going to be interesting to see, because the Toro Rosso and Red Bull, there isn't really too much difference performance-wise. So, if Kvyat is on it, he could finish ahead of both of them and say, you know, you made the wrong decision. And if there's another team there who are looking for another hot prospect, they could get Kvyat in, and you know, he's still young, he's still got talent, so he could still be one to watch out for.
I think it's a fascinating dynamic going forward, most definitely. And I suppose because Red Bull have two teams, that's what gives them the opportunity to switch, really, because normally you wouldn't have just binned him out of the team if you didn't really have a driver like Max Verstappen you could call out of another team. to put him in. So it's going to be fascinating how everyone deals with this, and that will be very interesting come Spain. You're listening to the NRF1 podcast on Acast and on Future Radio. It's time for the NRF1 Pit Stops. Now this, I'm going to cut straight to the chase. Nico Rosberg won. He won again. He won his fourth race on the trot this season. And he won how many at the end of last? Three? Is he on seven in a row?
Four. It was four last season, I think.
Four. So he's on eight. He's on a lot in a row. He's flying. Lewis Hamilton had a nightmare weekend of it again in terms of reliability. He's then suddenly chasing Nico Rosberg down in second. He's closing at a ridiculous rate. And you're all like, whoa, hang on. This is on. This is on here. Lewis is going to get the chance to prove himself. Lo and behold, all of a sudden, there's a water pressure issue. Lewis has to back off to the frustration of everyone. Just to the point where the gap goes back to the size it was when he started to close it down, about 12 seconds. At which point, the problem resolves itself. All of a sudden, it's back and Lewis will finish. That's fine. Oh, thank goodness. They then both finish the race, at which point Toto Wolff comes out, talks about the water pressure issue, but then suddenly reveals Nico Rosberg, of course, he didn't have it easy. He also had an issue. And when he then is asked what it was, he looks incredibly confused as he tries to work out what the issue actually was. His face, to me, told a lot, because he was like, so what was the problem with Nico? Well, it was we were getting some funny signals from the engine. Right, okay. Oh, obviously we didn't hear any of this during the race, because presumably someone decided not to put the radio messages out. To me, I don't know, I'm not buying any of it. And I know Lewis Hamilton has since come out and said, you know, just forget about the conspiracy theories, but I was really angry. Someone tell me I'm deluded and to get over it.
I'll go first, unless you want to jump in, Rich. I really hate conspiracy theories, but
Me too. This is the point.
But I have to have sympathy with anyone who wants to take that side. Although I don't fully want to sort of agree and say that that would be my opinion as well, I find myself very close to it. I think the whole thing looks very, very iffy. You know, I mean, looking at it in a commercial aspect, I mean, it's within Mercedes' interests to score the most points in the year and get the most sort of 1-2 finishes, etc., etc. And there shouldn't be any reason why they want to jeopardise that, because there's all money that comes into it and so on and so forth. But I find myself just not really having much of an answer, and seeing, like you said about Toto Wolff in the interview, I just thought that just looks... It made it look even worse. And then it made me think back to previous seasons. I mean, last season, Lewis didn't really have any mechanical issues, whereas Nico did. And then the previous season, 2014, it was the other way around, but Lewis was still managed to win the title. So I just wonder whether it's just on some sort of rotation thing, whether it's now his... But then that harks back to going to the conspiracy theories, which I try not to really buy into. It's just really difficult. I think we'll have to see what happens in the next race. But to have exactly the same problem on the Saturday occur in pretty much the same part, or no, I think the previous week was actually right at the start of qualifying, but it just looks a bit sort of peculiar, really. Maybe Mercedes are just trying to get a bit more of an interesting championship than last season, which was kind of a foregone conclusion as to who was going to win it, probably from a quarter of the way through the season. But I don't know. Over to Rich.
No, it's I don't necessarily think Mercedes are deliberately tampering with Hamilton's car, trying to, you know, make things go wrong. But there's definitely something funny the way that as soon as he starts to catch up and, you know, to start looking good, that this issue arises. And, you know, when the gap goes up with only 10 laps left, it's fine. It does seem strange. But again, you know, like Steve said, it's last year Hamilton didn't really have many issues, and the year before that he did. And it's, yeah, whether it kind of changes around. But really, that you don't want to be in the situation where you're having that. If, you know, if, if it was the other way around, I'm sure we could say, oh, Hamilton's been driving brilliantly. And as you know, as far as Rude Rosberg fans say, that there's conspiracy, you know, of all conspiracy theories regarding it. But yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some kind of team playing going on, but not necessarily deliberately tampering with the car.
I mean, that's probably where it needs defining, because I don't for one moment think that they're fiddling with the car before they go out, and what happens in qualifying is something that they're doing deliberately. I just think that in a situation where you've got one guy putting together the strategy for both cars and you're trying to manage a situation, and then everything that subsequently played out during the race, I just didn't really like it. Plus, you know, Lewis has won the last two titles. Wouldn't it be nice if a German driver won in a Mercedes that was going so well? I can imagine that's a massive commercial temptation, and if you get a situation during a race, maybe, you know, things might be like, you know, it might be nice if things happen like that. But I don't know, I guess it's, as you said, it's a conspiracy. It's probably not ideal. But the flip side of that, as we mentioned, Nico Rosberg had terrible luck last year, and in fact Russia was where his throttle failure effectively cost him victory. So it's not like he is maybe due a bit of luck, because I think he is, and he is flying. It's his first grand, it was his first Grand Slam, so that's a pole, fastest lap, and the race win, of course. His pole was easy as well. He was miles ahead of Vettel and more than a second ahead of everyone else, and it just looking like he's the man with all the momentum, and I don't quite know what's going to break that
at the moment. But there is still, I know we keep saying it, but there is still a long, long way to go. And I sort of started looking ahead the other day at the sort of the race calendar and sort of thinking, well, you know, if Lewis wants to have a serious hope, if you like, of winning this championship, I think, in my opinion, by the time we get to Silverstone, he's got to at least half the deficit to Rosberg, and if that's no different or increased, I think it's probably looking quite unlikely.
What's the gap at the moment?
43
points. That's quite a lot, isn't it? That's quite a lot of points. All right, well, let's move on, shall we, from Mercedes, who are clearly still extremely dominant. I want to just touch on two other teams. McLaren. You know, I think Fernando Alonso seems a lot happier with how the car is. So did Jenson Button, although he was a bit more cautious about it. Great moment around Sochi where Alonso just turned up the engine full blast, bashed out a really quick lap, and then just said, oh, sorry, I just wanted to have a bit of fun, and just nailed it. On the counter to that, there was a point where Lewis Hamilton overtook Alonso, and I assumed it was under blue flags, but it was actually just for position. So, but I guess maybe that's the case for a lot of places. But does it look like there's a bit more about McLaren now, do you feel, Rich?
Yeah, they have shown up, really, the last few races, you could say, this whole season, to be honest. Their qualifying hasn't quite been there getting into Q3, but they have, you know, managed to get points. Alonso's drive was one of the best from the Russian Grand Prix.
Probably one of the best he's had since he went back to McLaren, arguably.
Definitely, yeah, because the car was actually working. You didn't hear any problems for them. And it seems actually funny enough to say that the Honda engine's a bit more reliable than a Mercedes engine, which you could never have said last year. But the one thing I do hate, though, about these modern engines is the different modes. They can turn them up and down. It's like, why not just make an engine which is flat out the whole time? Because that's what you want to see. If the engine's flat out, they can, you know, let the drivers drive flat out, and you might have a bit more action.
Although that's another whole story. But no, I mean, I read in a report afterwards with McLaren is that they were mostly fuel saving for the whole race. You know, so whether they'd underfueled them by mistake or what have you, but they figured it had cost them about 50 seconds. And when you look at, like, Alonso finished in sixth, you know, which I think probably was his best result since being back at McLaren. And I mean, Button was a respectable 10th as well. So both points finish. I mean, it was a fairly tidy race for them. But I mean, if they hadn't been fuel saving, you know, and the supposed 50 seconds had it cost them, I mean, they could have even got more up towards, you know, where Williams were, you know, in the sort of fourth and fifth. So
it's keeping up with the fuel saving rate, I suppose. That's the problem, isn't it? One of those great regulations that try and make this sport relevant, but maybe undermines it a little bit in places too. One final mention, I think, for Renault and Kevin Magnussen, who had a lovely overtake on Daniel Ricciardo and showed a bit of what we'd seen with him when he was at McLaren, which I think is good to see, and bodes well given that Renault have got a few updates on the way as well. Anyway, this is the NRF1 podcast. We're with Acast, we're with Future Radio. It's time for the good, the Badoa, and the Ugly. It's our Of the Weekends. I reckon we can rattle through these quite quickly, gents, because it was a while ago. Driver of the weekend?
I want to say Alonso for reasons we've just discussed.
Love it, that's fine. I was going to say Sebastian Vettel, because I love how much revolved around the weekend in terms of the fact that he literally made three corners. And then, of course, what happened in qualifying. Steve, any suggestions anymore?
I was probably going to go with Bottas, actually, because, I mean, he had quite a respectable race, finished fourth. He wasn't too far behind sort of the podium of Raikkonen, so it was a pretty tidy weekend, really.
An encouraging sign for Williams, who get my vote for team of the weekend, would that be fair to say?
Fourth and fifth, yeah.
Yes, a much better showing than what we've seen the last few races from them, so yes, good for them.
Bodes well.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Okay, our pastor or goat of the weekend, mine would be Martin Brundle for his grid walk. He did this some sort of in joke with Jenson Button and then didn't tell us what it was. And I felt like saying, you're on television interviewing these guys for everyone who's paid to watch it. You've just had an in joke with them and not told us what it is. Thanks for making us feel really, really segregated from what you're going on about. Great.
I have to be honest, I just mute it every time he does a pit walk now. Have done for a long while, because the first person that he tries to find to have a lengthy conversation with is Jenson Button. Now, I appreciate, like, obviously we want to hear what he's got to say, you know, fellow British driver and all that, but there are other drivers on the grid. You know, and he'll go find other drivers and talk to them, but you can see it's just literally a very quick one. But he'll just happily spend 5 minutes with Button every single time, but that he'll never go to Lewis Hamilton.
Well, I was going to say that. They never go to Lewis, so they must know. Don't talk to me before the race, please.
Yeah, there was something that was alluded to with Lewis before, I think his first or second season in F1, but someone said, you know, every time Martin Brundle talks to you on the grid, you have a bad race. You know, why is that? So I don't know if he's just suddenly thought, nah, you're not coming to me.
I love that. Any more pastors or goats?
Kvyat.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, should we just give it to him then?
Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same. So
yeah, fair enough. How about the highlight of, I mean, the probably Daniel Kvyat.
Well, Vettel's radio.
Vettel's radio. We'll hear that at the end of the podcast. I'll make sure it pops on again. Anything else? What have I got here? It was the first time that they'd raced on the day of Ayrton Senna's death, and I thought some of the tributes were lovely. It's obviously such a poignant time for Formula One still. And of course, Roland Ratzenberger, who died that weekend too. Any other highlights, Rich?
Other than Alonso's, you know, sorry, just wanted to have some fun message. That's, you know, that was quite a highlight.
I tell you my primary highlight, though, it was the green room after the race with Vladimir Putin.
Awkward again.
Nico Rosberg kind of ignored him, and then apparently that didn't go down very well, did it? So some of the websites were trying to spin, and then this just god-awful conversation they were having through a translator. It's pretty much the most awkward television I've ever seen, and thankfully they just cut it short, I think, and went to somewhere else, because even the director thought, nah, no thanks, had enough of this. So that was my highlight. I love to feel awkward when I'm watching the telly.
It was the bit where he said, is everything okay here for you? And you could see Rosberg just go, yeah, it's fine. And it was just...
Yeah, make sure you say yes, it's fine.
Yeah.
Imagine anything else, eh? Good Lord alive. Right, well, and we're going to bottle everything up into the same podcast this week. So I think it's time to look ahead to Spain. But before we do that, let's catch up with just a few bits of news. Engine deals. There is a deal in place now for 2017 onwards, I think, where there is always going to be an engine available to every team somehow or other. And there is a clause in that, known as apparently by one team principal as the Red Bull clause, where the constructor and engine manufacturer are not allowed to slag each other off in the press as a result. So that will hopefully avoid any of those kind of awkward issues. There are other technical regulations for 2017 being discussed at the moment as well, and we'll have a prolonged debate about those in future. Red Bull debuted their safety screen as well, their little windscreen. Didn't look too bad, but didn't really look like an open cockpit Formula One car either. What did you guys make of it? We did talk about it a lot last time.
Yeah, I preferred that one to the other one, to the Halo design, which was a Ferrari. Yeah. Sort of pioneered. But I'm still just confused. I thought the original idea of these things was to cover the driver's head, but as well as like you know, sort of in front of their face as well, and sort of neither of them, for me, have sort of fully sort of capitalised on both of those. I'm still a bit confused. I mean, I think we're looking at them aesthetically as the problem rather than with the safety, and I think people are sort of picking the ones that actually sort of doesn't ruin the general look of the Formula One car. I'm probably just as guilty as that because I prefer the one that Red Bull pioneered rather than the Halo.
Although, I mean, I struggle to see how the Halo protects you from anything apart from a flying wheel, to be honest. So
it's better looking than the Halo, but then
there it is.
that's the screen that's, you know, got the windscreen on there. But then what they're going to do if it's wet? Is that going to cause massive issues? And then, if you get that screen, then are they going to go completely closed cockpit? You just, where does it stop? How far do you go before you decide what's the safest? I don't know, but it's open cockpit. I'd prefer to see it stay open. It's the risk that drivers face, unfortunately, and I'm pretty sure that all of them, when they get into the car, know what could happen, and yet they still do it for the love of the sport, for the love of it. And at the end of the day, that's why their wages can be millions a year.
Yeah, I don't think Formula One's quite got its head around what it's trying to do at the moment, which isn't ideal. We'll have tweets and social back after Spain. That's the plan. Apologies, I know we didn't have it last time either, and we do really love your contact. And there are a couple of ones that I've saved for future that have been put forward, and I'll make sure that a tweet goes out on the NRF1 Twitter feed and on our Facebook page. So that's at the NRF1 and on facebook.com/NRF1podcast. I'll make sure they get out there so that you can get in touch, and we'll discuss them when we have a little bit more time in future. But let's reflect, or look ahead to, I should say, Spain. Spanish Grand Prix, Circuit de Catalunya. It's not the most exciting track. They normally end up lining 2x2. It's where they usually test. And I guess it's not much to get excited about, really. Is that, that's a terrible way of previewing it, isn't it? Dear Lord.
Yeah, I think on the basis of the last race, I think sort of everything to get excited about, you know. I mean, you know, is Kvyat going to stay away from Vettel? And, you know, I mean, is
what if he actually sought him out? Imagine it, if he sought him out in his little Toro Rosso.
Coulthard and Schumacher years ago, wasn't it? Which sort of almost happened, didn't it?
I did think that was going to happen. I thought we'd see Seb, you know, chasing him down.
So I think there's lots of things to sort of look forward to. I mean, maybe Lewis Hamilton finally getting his first win since last season. But I mean, largely Spain is a little bit of a dull race, to be fair. It is more of like a qualifying type race. I mean, the DRS, is there two DRS zones on this one? I think there is, isn't there?
Yeah, you've got the back straight as well, which is kind of inside,
which has helped in recent years a little bit, but it still can be a bit processional, really.
And the most important weekend for is the key thing, Rich.
I think you'd have to say Hamilton being 43 points behind. He's got a lot to make up, and he needs to start doing that now. But I think he's not the most loved person by the Spanish, to be honest. Which would be quite nice to kind of see him do something just to wind him off a bit. It might sound a bit bad. I probably shouldn't say that.
No, it's fine. As long as they don't racially abuse him, that will be fine. Yeah. I mean, I would. It's a bit of a pick between Sebastian Vettel and Daniel Kvyat for me. I can't wait to see how Kvyat reacts. I mean, if it just goes off the rails, then fair enough, but we will see. How about you, Steve?
Well, you could say Fernando Alonso, because I mean, it is his home Grand Prix, you know, and I mean, it's a pretty terrible result last year for him, you know, at his home Grand Prix, and I mean, maybe he can, I mean, with a sixth place finish in Russia, I mean, maybe he can possibly do better than that. You never know.
Carlos Sainz as well. He doesn't have the distraction of Max Verstappen at Toro Rosso.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. As you know, he's also Spanish, he's a younger driver coming through, and will he be able to do something? You know, because if he finishes ahead of Kvyat, then Red Bull are almost going to be just in their decision to drop him. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Okay, here's the important bit on the NRF1 podcast. You're listening to us via Acast, iTunes, and of course Future Radio in Norwich. It's the Predictions League. Now, you're going to have to wait for your update in terms of the table and how everyone did at Russia. I'm sure they did great. We're going to get straight onto the predicting with us three here and into what we think will happen in Spain. Who would like to go first? Go on. Go on, Rich. You've prepared, I can tell. Steve hasn't, neither have I.
I prepared probably about an hour or so before I came, so...
That's a lot of preparations. Well, you didn't spend an hour on these, did you?
No, I kind of came up with a few while watching the touring cars today.
Amazing. So it's Colin Turkington.
Yeah, some of them are slightly touring car themed. Some of them are Spanish themed as well. Like this first one where I'm going to say at least one Spanish driver in the top 10.
Yes.
I kind of need some points because I'm a long way at the back. So my second one is going to be Kvyat to finish ahead of Verstappen.
Oh, now they see that's what I'm talking about. What a little subplot that is.
And this one's a bit safe, but no wet tyres to be used in any session.
Yeah, that is quite safe. You're not going to get a kudos point for that one.
This one I might, Rosberg DNF.
Yes, you can have one for that.
And this was my touring car theme, if anyone did see the touring cars today. It's someone to have a tyre blowout.
Oh, so we're talking full on ripped tyre and just the rim left.
Yeah, kind of Vettel, Spa last year kind of themed. That kind of tyre blowout.
With contact or without?
Say so without, just tyre's going to give up somewhere.
Really? Cool, that's...
Like Silverstone 2013 then.
Yeah,
like that.
When we had the blowout problems.
Yeah. That's quite a big call.
It's we've got hot weather at the minute. It could be hotter in Spain.
It's only be hotter than in Sochi, definitely. Yeah, love it.
Why not like it? So,
I love it, Rich. Good work. Good luck, obviously. Steve, do you want to go?
I'll give it a go. I'm just largely sitting here thinking I haven't actually thought of anything whatsoever, so I'm just going to have to wing this.
We can edit the gaps, don't we?
Let's say a completely mechanical, troubled-free weekend for Lewis Hamilton. Let's see if Mercedes can actually pull that out with the conspiracy theorists. So let's say a trouble-free weekend for Hamilton. I think it's just going to be a completely dominated Mercedes weekend, really. So I think a 1-2 on the Saturday and a 1-2 on the Sunday. And then I think a top 10 finish for both Williams. I think they've been going well recently. I think they'll continue that. But I still think it's going to be both McLarens out in Q2. And I think I'll leave it at that.
Good work. My turn then. And I will be editing the gaps here. So I think it will be a Mercedes 1-2 in terms of qualifying and in terms of the race. I'm not going to say which order though. I think Carlos Sainz will finish in the top 8. I think Max Verstappen will finish ahead of Daniel Ricciardo, which I think would be a pretty spectacular event if that happened. I think that two Williams cars will finish in consecutive places, if that makes sense. They'll finish side by side. And I think they will also both finish in the top 6 again. And there are suggestions of a Haas upgrade to their Ferrari engine, I think. So there's upgrades for Renault and upgrades for Haas. So I think we will see Romain Grosjean in the top 10. And I think we will see at least one Renault in Q2. There we go. And that is it. I think that puts an end to the misery. We'll update the prediction league properly after events in Spain, as we go through a couple of rounds of predictions, but I know it's the thing that everyone gets quite excited about. And if you want to add your predictions to the list, it's very straightforward. All you need to do is get in touch with your predictions on all the usual places. So that's Twitter at the NRF1, facebook.com/NRF1podcast. You can email nrf1podcast@gmail.com. All you need to do is get those predictions in before the start of FP1. It's the only rule out there. And they will be added into the pot, and you can join the league and see how well you fare compared to the experts. Well, really, which is Kyle. He's the expert. But we're done, I think. Thank you so much for listening. Steve, Rich, thank you so much for your time. We will be back following events in Barcelona, which will be fascinating to watch. There are a lot of subplots to digest. In the meantime, thanks for getting in touch. We look forward to hearing from you as well over the course of the next fortnight, and indeed the rest of the season. Until then, goodbye.
I'm out. Crash. Somebody hit me in the rear, turn two, and then somebody hit me in the rear again in turn three. For sake.